A key lending rate used to calculate important things like your mortgage has been overhauled. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. We'll take a deep dive into why, after 45 years, a tainted benchmark lending rate is being replaced. But first, oil prices are creeping slightly higher this morning ahead of a key decision from the world's biggest oil producers. West Texas and Brent crude are trading between $76 and $79 a barrel as OPEC Plus wraps up its first meeting of the new year. From Dubai, the BBC's Samir Hashmi explains what to expect.
OPEC is expected to go ahead with the planned increase in February. It would be about 400,000 barrels of oil per day. In March 2020, after the outbreak of COVID-19, OPEC Plus had cut down oil supplies by 10%. Now they're slowly, gradually, in a phased manner, bringing back those supplies. Last month, when the meeting had taken place in December, a lot of countries were still trying to figure out the severity of Omicron and whether that would lead to more lockdowns. Demand has stayed pretty firm over the last 1 month in Asia specifically, which is one of the biggest importers of oil. South Korea, India, they've stayed pretty firm. So in all likelihood, OPEC is going to go ahead with its planned increase from February.
So OPEC Plus not too concerned, at least at this point, about the long-term impact of COVID. So if these cuts do come through today, Samir, that leaves about 3 million barrels a day in pandemic-induced cuts to sort of walk back by this fall. What could throw that into jeopardy?
The only thing that could put a brake on those plans is the emergence of a new variant, which is more threatening or is seen as more deadly. But so far, they seem pretty confident that now the world is better equipped to deal with any new variants that might emerge. And they think that even the global economy is looking in better shape than it was in 2020 and 2021. And they think the recovery would be on track. And they don't expect any more lockdowns, even if there is a rise in cases, and which is what gives them the confidence. And even if you look at the supplies, because eventually oil is also the prices, oil prices, which is about between the $75 to $80 mark right now, that's the price they want the price to stay at, because that's a comfortable level for them. There is a slightly more supply right now in the market, but not too much to bother them at this stage, because they think eventually demand would go up in the coming months and it would absorb the slight oversupply in the market.
The BBC's Samir Hashmi for us in Dubai. Thanks for breaking this down for us.
Nice talking to you, Victoria.
A quick check of some other numbers now. Shares of embattled Chinese property giant Evergrande resumed trading in Hong Kong today. They closed up 1.3%. Elsewhere, the Turkish lira is down another 1.4% today. That's after inflation data on Monday showed prices surged more than 36% in December from a year ago. President Erdogan said he was saddened by the data and has pledged to lower inflation to single digits, but he refuses to use higher interest rates to accomplish that goal. Countries across the Western world, including in the U.S., have been cutting down self-isolation requirements for vaccinated people as they deal with new surges in Omicron coronavirus infections. The move is to limit or prevent disruptions in industries dealing with staff shortages, but China has taken the opposite approach to new infections. Cities across that country have gone into full lockdown to stop a new wave of COVID infections. Authorities have now told people in Yuzhou to stay in their homes. The order comes 2 weeks after the much bigger city of Xi'an was locked down following a larger-scale outbreak. The BBC's Robin Brandt has more on that from Shanghai.
It took just three asymptomatic cases, for the authorities here to act and shut down a city of more than a million people. As of last night in Yuzhou, almost all vehicles have been banned from the roads. All shops and businesses, apart from supermarkets supplying food, have been told to close. People are not allowed to leave their homes. 500 kilometres away, millions more in the city of Xi'an, famed for its terracotta warriors, are 2 weeks into a lockdown. Some people there have reported serious problems with food supply. China's government is pursuing what it calls a dynamic zero-COVID strategy, where it's trying to maintain a level of no COVID cases.
That's the BBC's Robin Brandt reporting from Shanghai there. Well, the month of January has ushered in a new year, yes, but also a bit of financial history. The lending rate that's long been used to set things like your car loan, mortgage rate, and credit card offers has been almost phased out. The London Interbank Offered Rate, or LIBOR for short, was found during the financial crisis to have been rigged in favor of and by some of the world's biggest investment banks. But because it plays such a key role in the world's financial system, how is it being phased out? Phil Stafford has been looking into that question for the Financial Times. He explains first, though, what LIBOR actually does and how it works.
It's a lending rate. It represents what banks would lend to each other at. Once you know that, you would then embed it into all sorts of contracts, big ones like derivatives, but ones of everyday variety, car loans, credit cards. You often see if in the small print that your interest rate payment would be something above LIBOR. So as a result, it's really embedded in an awful lot of contracts around the world.
How do you phase out something so key as LIBOR?
The strange thing is, LIBOR represented a market that sort of no longer really exists. The way that banks fund themselves has changed dramatically. So the market itself wasn't really anything, and yet it was still being used in contracts. The way it was compiled was that banks would submit their best efforts to really work out what LIBOR should be. So effectively, they were guesses. What we saw in the past where people were actually manipulating those guesses for their own ends. But what you actually had was a massive market with contracts worth up to about $300 trillion built pretty much on thin air. And the regulators just said, this is nuts. Objectively, this is cannot continue. And so what they decided to do was to slowly phase it out over 4 years and say to the market, you're going to have to create something else. Now, there isn't a like-for-like replacement for LIBOR. They've created new rates that are based on overnight rates, much more frequently used in the market. The advantage of those is that they are based on real transactions, no guesses, no manipulation.
And I guess the big question is, if the whole point of this was replacing it because it could be manipulated, how do you guarantee that the same sort of thing doesn't happen again? Is it just because it's based on something real and not something speculative?
Yes, I mean, obviously all human systems can be gamed, and this is sort of no exception, but it does make it a little bit harder. The oddity at the heart of the old LIBOR system was that it was a handful of banks every day guessing what a number should be that then goes into everyone's financial contracts. If you have a market that is well used, you know, a little bit like a stock market, it's much harder to manipulate. You need an awful lot more money, a lot more organization, and of course, the trail does get an awful lot easier to follow because a lot of it will be electronic. And so which will regulators, and to be fair, a lot of banks, risk management, legal departments also want, because they don't want to be ending up with massive multi-billion dollar fines again.
It's really fascinating stuff. The FT is Philip Stafford. Thanks so much for breaking this down for us.
No problem.
Well, it's not just the end of an era for the use of LIBOR as a benchmark rate. Today also is the end of an era for BlackBerry, which is officially stopping service on all its classic smartphones. The company's distinctive phone design in the late 90s, outfitted, you might remember, with a full keyboard, made it a major player in the early smartphone world. At its peak 11 years ago, it owned nearly 20% of the global smartphone market, selling more than 50 million devices a year. But with the meteoric rise of iPhones and Android devices, BlackBerry stopped making its own phones in 2016, and it's now pivoted out of hardware to focus solely on its software business. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.